From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Andrew Cuomo delivers his State of the State address. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, will share his analysis of the speech. And two Adirondack environmental advocacy groups are suing New York State. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo released his State of the State message this week, and $143 billion budget spending plan, including $1 billion more for schools next year, as well as ethics reforms. Our Capitol correspondent Karen DeWitt was there and filed this report.
Cuomo saved his plans for education and ethics reform for his speech. That's after already rolling out a massive infrastructure plan that he says would make the late Governor Nelson Rockefeller jealous, and calling on a statewide $15 minimum wage, as well as numerous other proposals.
There is no doubt that this is an ambitious agenda. What else did you think I was going to give to you?
On ethics, the governor made no direct mention of the scandals that led to the arrest and conviction of both leaders of the legislature on corruption charges, though he did say 2015 was a tough, ugly year on many levels. He proposes changing some of the practices that factored heavily in those trials, including closing the LLC loophole that allows corporations to form limited liability companies and donate unlimited amounts of money to candidates. And Cuomo also wants to limit lawmakers' outside income to just 15% of their $79,500 a year base salary.
I propose we adopt the congressional system of limiting outside income for legislators. It's proven, it's cleaner, and it's a more effective model that the people of this nation have confidence in, and I believe you should accept the same.
The proposal received tepid applause, as did calls for voluntary public campaign financing and holding a constitutional convention. Cuomo toned down his rhetoric on education. It's in contrast to past years. He did not disparage what he's called the education bureaucracy, and instead says he wants to adopt his own Common Core Commission proposals. They retreat from the governor's former stance, tying teacher performance reviews more closely to standardized tests. Cuomo blamed the state education department, known as SED, which he does not control, for the troubles, including a student boycott of the exams.
We urge SED to do it right this time.
The governor called for $2 billion more dollars in school funding spread out over 2 years and $100 million to turn struggling schools into community schools with expanded hours and services. He continues to call for an education tax credit that would help large donors give money to private and some public schools. The speech, which also served as a budget presentation, was light on details of how the governor will pay for all of his programs, which led to skepticism from Senate Deputy Majority Leader John DeFrancisco.
There are a lot of dollars being spent in that budget, and quite frankly, I don't see how it comes under the 2% cap that we've been voluntarily complying with.
Government reform groups were heartened by the governor's ethics agenda. Barbara Bartoletti with the League of Women Voters says she hopes the governor now fights for actual passage of the measures.
He hasn't used political capital. He hasn't used the bully pulpit to do this.
Other lawmakers, though, oppose the governor's call to strictly limit outside income. Senate Leader John Flanagan says the legislature is meant to be part-time.
Having people with diverse backgrounds who have an understanding of the real world has some extraordinary and inherent value.
At the end of the nearly two-hour presentation, Cuomo spoke of his personal troubles over the past year, the death of his father, and his girlfriend, celebrity chef Sandra Lee's bout with cancer. He says the experiences have led him to endorse paid family leave financed by employers so New Yorkers can spend more time to care for sick and dying loved ones. And he says he'll also fund a $90 million program to expand breast cancer screenings. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Let's turn to the State of the State address by New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. Many different proposals released. It's a $143 billion budget spending plan, including $1 billion more for schools next year. He talked about ethics reform, major infrastructure, and a heckler at the event.
Yeah, Charles Barron stood up and he started yelling about conditions in his community. Look, 90 minutes is too long. It seemed like forever when the governor gets up and he does a produced film and he can congratulates the produced filmmakers about how well the state is doing. This is a run-up to the next election. Let's face it, we all know that. But it's punishing in that you have to sit there and listen to the stuff. I think there would be a lot more dignity and a lot more appreciation if the guy came on in the old assembly chamber, not this big hall, and took a little bow to the audience and said, here it is. But instead, you know, we feel like we're being force-fed, and that is not a pleasant place to be.
What about grading the speech, Professor, and the idea that you often talk about politicians not caring about those that have the least, and yet Cuomo did release a pretty ambitious proposal on the homeless, and then maybe you might comment on his relationship with de Blasio.
I just was going to say that part of this, all the whole speech, people look at it and they say, okay, now how much of this is his continued fight with the mayor of New York, which nobody can really understand. Look, de Blasio is not the most popular mayor in the city. Nevertheless, there is this unexplainable passion on the governor's part to destroy de Blasio. We just don't get it. It doesn't make him look good. It makes him look like a bully. And the fact of the matter is that that is one of the things that he's been fighting. He has changed his approach. Now his former enemies, the teachers, he's doing anything he can to pacify them. He is a different guy. He's channeling FDR and all the other major Democratic people who put money into construction. He's come up with a plan that some say is $100 billion. And he says, well, no, the taxpayers won't have to pay that because I'm going to get the people going to build the old post office or the train station to pay for it themselves. Yeah. We'll see about that. In any case, $100 billion worth of spending. This is an anti-taxer. So somebody's going to have to borrow the money to get all of that done.
So let's continue with our analysis of some of the specific items proposed by the governor in the State of the State,
sure.
Alan. As the Times puts it, after laying out an ambitious policy agenda for the coming year in the State of the State address that blended the personal and the political, Governor Andrew Cuomo harked back to his tough year when he lost his father, Mario, pivoting deftly to call for 12 weeks of paid family leave. He called for the economic and moral case of a $15 minimum wage. He pledged multi-billion dollar investments in transportation, infrastructure, and housing. You've referenced those already, and an aggressive plan to attack homelessness. And the Times puts it, oh, and he mentioned another New York problem, ethics and problems with corruption, Alan.
Well, let me put it this way. I wasn't satisfied, and but who am I, with what he said about ethics. I think a great deal more can be done. I think you need radical surgery at this stage of the game. I don't think saying we're going to take your pensions away if you steal is enough, because I think what you have to do is figure out why when people get power, they abuse that power and what that arrogance is all about. To me, the answer is do what New York City did and say to their politicians, nope, two terms is enough, or, you know, 8 years is enough. You can't do more than that, because otherwise, you get arrogant. I'm for initiative and referendum. They keep talking about a constitutional convention, but two things that ought to be changed are that you could have a limit on how long somebody can serve, and secondly, that when the voters don't like what they see in the cesspool known as the legislature, they can turn around and, with enough signatures, get their own law on the ballot. I had a letter yesterday from a guy who said, oh, you know, Alan, I lived in California. Sometimes they put bad things on the ballot there, too. But that's democracy, folks. And I live in Massachusetts where we have it, and it works. And it is a good way of containing thievery and bribery and everything else.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand led an official Senate trip to the Middle East last week to meet with allies and discuss a broad range of regional security issues, including the threat from groups such as the Islamic State and Hezbollah, as well as progress on implementing the Iran nuclear agreement. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
Gillibrand, a Democrat, says she and seven other senators met with heads of state, ambassadors, and other top officials in Israel, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Austria during the trip to discuss strategies to counter Iran and fight global terrorism.
We sat down with Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Rivlin to discuss Israel's future and the constant threat of terrorism that our ally faces every single day. We talked about the unique bond our two countries share and about how critically important it is for our alliance to remain strong as ever. And we all agreed that the United States and Israel should sign an updated military MOU sooner rather than later. My colleagues and I traveled to southern Israel as well and saw incredible technology there that the Israeli military is developing with the U.S. military to detect tunnels and to defend against terrorism. This technology is a clear example of how Congress can act to help strengthen Israel's security. Last June, I supported funding this program in the Senate, and last week, I was finally able to see it firsthand.
Gillibrand there referring to her support for funding for anti-tunnel technology in the National Defense Authorization Act in June 2015. Lahav Harkov is a Jerusalem Post parliamentary reporter. She comments on the significance of the delegation of Democratic senators Gillibrand led.
It was the first such delegation since the battle over the Iran deal last summer, and it really shows the strong bipartisan support in the U.S. for Israel as the only democracy in the Middle East, as a country that shares a lot of values with the U.S. And I just want to sort of emphasize that it's bipartisan and that it's not only Republicans, that even if there were some differences over the Iran deal, for example, and over some specific issues, the support is still there. And this delegation, I think, was reassuring to a lot of Israelis and I think to some Americans who care about Israel.
Gillibrand also met with officials from the International Atomic Energy Agency in Vienna to learn about the progress of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, also known as the Iran Nuclear Agreement, which Gillibrand supported in September. The senators and IAEA officials discussed how they will monitor Iran's implementation and ensure that it is held accountable. Gillibrand says her position on the Iran deal has not changed.
The reason why the deal is better for the United States' national security and Israel's national security is because it cuts off the three known pathways to any nuclear bomb. And in fact, before the agreement comes into full force in terms of releasing sanctions, the Iranians have to perform on all their end of the bargain. So there's a facility called Arak, which is a heavy water plutonium facility that, frankly, if it was up and running, you couldn't bomb it at all because it would create a nuclear fallout site. Under this agreement, they are going to have to fill that facility with concrete, meaning it is a future bomb target, meaning it can never be used as a heavy water plutonium facility again. It really stops the pathway to a bomb. The other facility that's deep in the ground, all that production comes to the top of the ground, another national security priority for the U.S. and Israel. And one of the best parts of the agreement is now we will have access through the IAEA to inspect their entire supply chain, which is something we could have never hoped for.
In Turkey, Gillibrand and the senators held meetings with Turkish officials to discuss the threat from the Islamic State and other terrorist groups and the Syrian refugee crisis. They also met with government officials in Saudi Arabia, including women appointed to Saudi Arabia's Shura Council, to discuss counterterrorism efforts and U.S.-Saudi relations. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Two Adirondack environmental advocacy groups are suing New York State, seeking to block implementation of revisions to the land management plan for the Essex Chain Lakes in the Central Adirondacks, currently under consideration by the Department of Environmental Conservation and the Adirondack Park Agency. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
The 19,600-acre Essex Chain Lakes Tract is part of a state land acquisition in 2012 that includes the eight lakes of the Essex Chain and numerous other rivers, lakes, and ponds, including the Hudson and Cedar Rivers. The Adirondack Park Agency is taking comments on proposed revisions to the state land master plan that would allow some use of all-terrain bicycles in the Essex Chain and Pine Lake primitive areas, and also allow use of non-natural materials for bridge construction over the Cedar River. Revisions would also allow snowmobile use in some areas. On Monday, Adirondack Wild, Friends of the Forest Preserve, and Protect the Adirondacks filed suit against the state in Albany County Supreme Court. Protect's Executive Director Peter Bauer says it is the only available move left to prevent any damage to the park.
The two main issues with the lawsuit have to do with protection of the wild and scenic rivers. It's really up to the legislature to change the Wild and Scenic and Recreational Rivers Act, or for the DEC to officially go through the process of changing its regulations. Because right now, the way the Essex Chain UMP has been approved, it violates both the legislative act as well as the regulations.
The litigants claim numerous violations of the unit management plan. The most egregious, they say, include construction of a new bridge over the Cedar River, the opening of a logging bridge over the Hudson River, construction of snowmobile corridors, and allowing bicycle use in primitive areas. Adirondack Wild partner David Gibson feels they have exhausted all remedies administratively and had no other choice but to turn to the courts.
It's not just an action at the Cedar River or the Polaris Bridge or a bike route that goes on for 8 or 9 miles. The insult will be if that is replicated across the park. And that's what I'm and what we are primarily concerned about. And that's what raises it to such a serious level that we resort to the judicial system for a remedy here.
While not happy, municipal officials in the Adirondacks expected the legal action by advocacy groups. Long Lake is one of the towns within the Essex Chain Lakes Tract. Supervisor Clark Seaman is optimistic that the state will prevail.
We've been having discussions about the Essex Chain with DEC, APA, and all the stakeholders for 2 years now. I just attended the public hearing on the slump changes last week, and one of my constituents actually spoke at that public hearing and said, you know, this is the third time that I've made the same comments, referring to the classification hearings and the UMP hearings and now the slump change. Let's get it done. And I think that he said it all. We would like to see, we being local government, the local folks here, we would like to see this plan implemented so we can start seeing the benefit from it.
Adirondack Park Local Government Review Board Executive Director Fred Monroe blasts the two litigants, saying the lawsuit ignores facts and the groups never worked with other environmental groups, communities, or agencies on the plan.
They're just trying to go in the back door with a lawsuit, and I think part of it's because they know that there's court precedence that says that the democratically elected representatives of the people can't participate in that lawsuit. And so they try to get what they want through the court process without a critically important party. It's not carrying out the wishes of the public in the process that was agreed upon by most of the what we would classify as the rational environmental groups.
Adirondack Park Agency spokesman Keith McKeever told WAMC that the agency does not comment on pending litigation.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. App-controlled ride-sharing services such as Uber and Lyft have exploded in popularity in many of the United States' major cities. But the services are outlawed in upstate New York. In Saratoga Springs, opponents and supporters gathered for the city's first dialogue on bringing the services to the Spa City. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard was there and filed this report.
In the new legislative session, lawmakers are expected to debate regulations to bring ride-sharing services upstate. Over the past several months, in large communities like Albany and Poughkeepsie, Uber has rallied its supporters to bring the smartphone-based service upstate, which is not allowed outside New York City. On Tuesday night, the Saratoga County Chamber of Commerce brought both sides of the debate together in a city that thrives on a tourism economy. Chamber President and CEO Todd Shimkus.
Certainly in a tourist community like this, where people are coming from outside of the area, many from communities where they're able to use ride-sharing applications, we think it has some real viability here, particularly during the summer season.
Taylor Zorman is new to the Spa City, originally from Cleveland, where she used Uber. The first time she visited Saratoga was last August during the hectic Travers weekend, which annually floods the city with visitors.
Personally, it's convenient. I mean, I would love to take a $6 Uber ride home instead of having to worry about where I'm going to park, which I found out is a huge issue here. Everyone talks about where they're going to park.
Zorman says the service would help get more drunk drivers off the road. One of Uber's biggest cheerleaders in the Capital Region is Vic Christopher, co-owner of Downtown Troy's Lucas Confectionery and Peck's Arcade restaurants.
Introducing this service will open up a whole new demographic of customers from the surrounding areas that can get to our restaurants and bars and enjoy our retail shopping very easily.
Uber has released its own numbers. It says if introduced, it would bring 700 jobs to the region. But the Saratoga County Chamber is cautious about taking a position on the issue.
We certainly don't want to support something that would harm local businesses or cause jobs to be eliminated, whether it's dispatchers, cab drivers, mechanics. We're definitely sensitive to that.
James Grozik, owner of Saratoga Springs-based Value Van Taxi and Car Service, said safety is his main concern for customers and drivers. Grozik is skeptical about how ride-sharing drivers would be insured and certified.
If it's a level playing field, I'm all for it. I think competition is good for everybody. It keeps prices down, keeps service up. Those are all good things. But if they come into effect and they don't have to pay $3,000 a car for insurance like I do and the rest of our drivers, no vetted police background checks, no FBI checks, anything like that, that's a safety issue.
Safety is also a concern among states that already allow ride sharing. In Massachusetts, lawmakers have considered adding fingerprinting to driver background checks. There's also the question if ride sharing drivers should be considered employees rather than contractors, and therefore eligible for benefits. Reporting from Saratoga Springs, I'm Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1603. Or just head to our website at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.